Good morning, Ms. Vogel.
Good morning. I first want to start by saying thank you to all of you for being here today. I'm actually an alum of Chatham State College, so it's really nice to see the Court of Appeals come out here and talk to students. And that program has really taken off since I was here, so I think this is a wonderful opportunity for all the students. And I hope you get the opportunity to go and take a look at the courtroom and have a look around the Justice Studies program, because it's one heck of a program.
Thank you.
So I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Crystal J. She was the mother in this underlying juvenile case in which her rights as a parent were terminated. This was a case that was initially adjudicated, I believe, in June of 2014, and a motion to terminate rights was filed a little under, I think, it was probably filed around that 15-month period, but wasn't actually heard before the court until approximately 22 to 24 months into the case. Now, as you can see from my brief, the largest concern that I had about the evidence presented on the motions to terminate rights related to, I guess it's classified easily as an insufficiency of evidence. And I think that my brief walked through what I felt was insufficient as far as each of the statutory grounds were considered. I think that when the case was first filed, the reasons for removal in the initial juvenile court petition related to domestic violence, inappropriate people around the children, and the substance use of both parents, I believe. The case plan that was adopted by the court was meant to address some of those issues, and it required the mother to undergo a substance abuse evaluation, to participate in any kind of drug counseling or treatment that was recommended, to engage in family support, to undergo parenting classes, and to submit to drug testing. And I guess the evidence overall, in my opinion, really focused on what her progress was. And I think to generally summarize my argument would be that I think that the state tried to characterize that the amount of effort that she put forth just simply wasn't sufficient. And of course, our argument would be that, you know, she made a tremendous amount of progress from beginning to end, as evidenced by a lot of the testimony that came from the main caseworker on the case.
Ms. Vogel, how long were the children out of home placement?
I want to say by the time that we got to adjudication, we were approximately 24 months. However, the one issue that I had with that mechanical calculation of time was simply that there was a period of time where the children spent a significant amount of time actually residing with the mother. No, there wasn't an official change in placement by the court. However, my client had progressed to the point where the children were staying in her home regularly overnight. The visitation was no longer strictly supervised, and they were subject to just random drop-ins by the supervised visitation aides, and things were actually going quite well.
Was that still the same situation at the time of the termination hearing?
No, and at that point, so around the same time where those children had been largely in the mother's home fairly regularly, we'd actually had a permanency hearing at about that time to see if the judge was willing to return permanent custody and placement to the mother. And in fact, I know the judge had a difficult decision before him, but he determined not to do that at that time. And I will admit that I think that my client really struggled with that decision, and maybe things weren't as good as they could have been after that. But I do think that the fact that mechanical determination of 15 of 22 may possibly be affected by the fact that the children were largely in the mother's home at that time.
After the children were removed again, was there some regression in your client's progress in overcoming her addiction? And wasn't there also some difficulty with her exercising visitation?
Well, and that goes again to part of my concern about the insufficiency of the evidence at trial. Now, I think that you could classify it as regression, but I think my largest concern was that the state largely failed to prove what kind of visitation was missed, what kind of incarceration my client was facing, how long she was actually incarcerated, whether, I guess, the number of drug tests that my client had submitted to that were supposedly negative. And if you looked at the evidence at the TPR trial, largely the judge kept out a great majority of the evidence related to the drug tests citing due process concerns simply because there wasn't a sufficient witness, not enough foundation to establish who was taking the tests, whether the tests were positive for any specific substance. None of that actually made it into the record. And I believe that the only incarceration that was actually cited by any witness with specificity came from one particular caseworker, and it was related to the fact that my client had spent 4 days on a probation sanction. Now, I think the overall concern is that there were no more specifics as to what other drug tests there were, what substances were being tested for, and what periods of time my client was actually incarcerated and thus unable to provide any care for her children. And in fact, I know as a practical matter, it would be common sense, I suppose, to assume that while my client was incarcerated that she wasn't providing any financial assistance, but you actually find that that is not present in the record. And so that's my overall concern as far as the argument about insufficient evidence as far as that regression would go.
Was there testimony presented that some of the witnesses that testified were very concerned about your client's ability to maintain sobriety, and various people testified that her Crystal's admittance to using illegal drugs?
Well, I believe that if you would look in the record, the admission from my client that she was first using methamphetamine came in 2014 at the beginning of the case. Now, after that time, she had undergone a substance abuse evaluation. She had participated in various types of treatment. She had participated in drug court. Now, after those things had happened and after my client had the children in her home essentially full time as of, I think it was September of 2015, there's really a lack of evidence in the record as to what the positive drug tests were for. So we have nothing in the record that shows that she was actually positive for methamphetamine for those tests.
Does it matter?
What's that?
Does it matter?
Well, I think when you're looking at the specific ground that she was a habitual user of a narcotic drug and that it was...
But if it was A rather than B, does it matter which it is?
Well, I just don't think we have any idea what specific drug she may have been testing positive for. It could have been an opioid that she had a legitimate prescription for. None of that came into evidence.
Is there any evidence presented that she is taking prescription drugs?
Yes, I believe, and I believe that in fact the prosecutor had even cited something in her brief about how there was a concern about my client having access to some of her prescription drugs but not necessarily keeping them in the proper bottles. And so I don't think that there was sufficient evidence showing at least that point that it was specifically a narcotic drug. Now the other issue as far as that question is concerned is I also don't think that there was sufficient evidence to show that any particular drug use by my client was actually detrimental to the children. I know that the state continued to allege that my client was using drugs and that she struggled to parent her children. But if you actually look at the evidence as far as why Ms. J was struggling to parent with her children, you would see, especially from the evidence or the testimony from Jen Taylor, who was the main caseworker on the case, that my client at times would speak to the children in a harsh tone or that she lacked transportation. And I think I really struggle with the fact that a client could be denied placement in custody of her children because she doesn't own a car.
Let me ask it a little bit different way. At the trial for the termination of her parental rights, what evidence was there that she was in a position to have the children returned to her and have placement and custody of the children at that time?
At the time of termination?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the evidence did show at the exact time of termination that my client was in fact incarcerated, but there was no evidence as to why she was incarcerated, whether it was a probation violation, whether she was incarcerated for a day, half a day, or a year. There was absolutely no evidence in the record to support that.
So what do we do with the proposition that we shouldn't allow children to be suspended in foster care?
Well, and I don't think there was any evidence to suggest that the children would have been suspended in foster care. I mean, we had no idea how long the mother was going to be in jail. She could have very well been released that particular day, especially when it wasn't clear necessarily from the record what she was incarcerated for, whether it was a sanction, whether it was a new charge.
Can we back up just a little bit further?
Absolutely.
When the motion for termination of parental rights was filed, was she in a position to parent the child?
And I'm trying to remember at the specific time that the termination of parental rights was filed. And I imagine that it was filed right around, would you like me to finish the question? Probably around that 15-month period, just because I believe that the state is under an obligation to file at that 15-month period. However, if you notice that that wasn't actually tried for a period of time substantially later, I believe that was related to the fact that my client was actually doing quite well, and that's why it continued to extend until there was a trial, I want to say at least 6 months later.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
How much time did we take Ms. Vogel over?
30 seconds.
Would you please add that to the appellee's time? Good morning, Ms. Larson.
Good morning, Chief Judge. Honorable Justices, if everybody's ready and if everybody can hear me, we'll get started.
We're ready.
All right. My name is Danielle Larson. I'm a deputy county attorney outside of Scottsbluff County, Nebraska, and I have the privilege of representing the state of Nebraska. Today, really, that state has kind of shrunk to two minor children, and I'm here today to ask you to affirm the holding of the lower court and sustain the termination of Crystal J's parental rights. I believe there was no error by the undercourt, and the state did prove at trial that the evidence established by clear and convincing evidence that there were grounds for termination under Section 43-292 of the Nebraska Revised Statute, and that termination was in Stevie and Jaden's best interests. I think it kind of helps a little bit to get kind of a timeline of how this case progressed. And we have the first witness for the state who testified had actually arrested opposing counsel's client in February of 2014. She had her two minor children, Jaden and Stevie, in the car. It was a call-in where a passerby had noticed her snorting a substance in the vehicle, and a search of the vehicle after her arrest found methamphetamine in the children's diaper bags. In April of 2014, Jennifer Taylor was assigned to the case. She was, as Ms. Vogel indicated, the primary caseworker for this. And in June of 2014, the children were removed from the care and custody of Crystal J because at a home visit, a caseworker noticed a syringe lying next to Stevie. On August 4th of 2014, Ms. J was sentenced to 2 years of probation for possessing methamphetamine. She was, as part of that, given a term probation to serve through the Scottsbluff County Drug Court. And on September 15th of 2014, she was arrested by Deputy Chris Still while at the drug court for a drug court violation. And when he took her to the jail, he searched her purse, found methamphetamine in there again. She spent from January through March of 2015 in inpatient treatment, which limited her contact with the children. She had phone call visits with them. July 8th of 2015, probation found drug evidence. Sergeant Ed Jaden, a snort tube in her purse. Over the summer of 2015, she was dismissed from the IOP, the intensive outpatient program, because of her lies, manipulation, and positive drug tests. In December of 2015, the case plan changed the goal from reunification to adoption. And then in January of 2016 through April of 2016, family support starts having concerns. She's refusing drug tests. She's got her medications in different bottles. February of 2016, and I believe this was the reference, the 4 days she spent in jail on probation sanctions for her positive tests. On March 2nd, I believe, was the date the termination of parental rights was actually filed. She was arrested, or positive, I'm sorry, on March 3rd of 2016 for methamphetamine. That was placed into evidence, the drug test by the family support worker. On March 9th of 2016, she was arrested again after a methamphetamine pipe was found in her possession. At a supervised visit, she justified that by saying she was going through a lot. And on June 13th of 2016, the termination trial was actually held. And the testimony from Mr. Aguirre, who was Ms. J's probation officer at the time, testified that she was incarcerated on that date, and she was facing resentencing on three separate cases for a possibility of up to 15 years in jail.
And refresh my recollection, the father of these children was not part of these proceedings and not in the picture. Is that in our record?
Yes, the father of these children had dropped out very early in the case. I believe by February of 2015 was the last time he had contact with the department. He came for the termination of parental rights hearing and left halfway through the trial, which was really the first time since February any of the caseworkers had seen him or had contact with him. In terms of...
Counsel, yes. Ms. Vogel indicates that the children returned to the home of their mother and was there for some period of time. Do you agree with that? Do you think the evidence establishes that?
With all due respect, Your Honor, no. At some point, the children progressed to having overnight visits with Ms. J, but care and custody was never returned to her. And those overnight visits stopped by March 3rd, I believe, when she tested positive for methamphetamine.
So how many days was the overnight allowed?
I believe the overnight visits, when they were started, if my recollection is correct, she was having a weekend. I think she had maybe Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night.
So is it your position that if you even count that period for her favor, it's still 15 of the last 22 months prior to the filing of the petition for termination?
Yes, Your Honor.
Children were out of home and in an out-of-home placement?
Yes, Your Honor. It would be my position for that. At the time termination was filed, the children had been in out-of-home care for, I believe, 20 of the last 22 months. And if you consider...
Part of that time would be these overnight visits that she could at least argue that she should not have those counted against her.
Yes. But if memory serves correctly, those overnight visits started possibly in September of 2015 and had ended then early in the winter of 2016. With regards to the other grounds alleged by the state, the judge found by clear and convincing evidence that Ms. J. termination was appropriate because Ms. J. had continuously or repeatedly neglected and refused to give Jaden and Stevie necessary parental care and protection. And I think one of the things I hope the record makes clear is the fact that while she was able to meet maybe their very basic needs, providing them with food, with shelter, and clothing, there were concerns, particularly of Sarah Bernhardt, the counselor for the children, about her ability to meet particularly Jaden's elevated behavioral needs. In the deposition that was entered in, I believe as Exhibit 47, Ms. Bernhardt's testimony about Ms. J's relationship with Stevie was that my previous testimony has been that the relationship with his mother causes anxiety for him and stress, and it's very difficult for him. There was a pattern of Ms. J being unable to get Jaden to his counseling appointments and having missed several of the family counseling that were scheduled between her and Jaden. In terms of best interest, to me, and Chief Justice, I believe you already hinted at this a little bit, the case law is very clear. Children, particularly of these ages, cannot be allowed to languish in foster care. And I think that's where the time really kind of comes into play in this case. And I feel an urgency that these children need permanency. And they need that ability to know what happens next. And I think particularly for Jaden, that was well documented, how that insecurity affected his behaviors. It was fairly traumatic for him. And there were documentations from the caseworker who had seen it, from his therapist herself, who could testify. When he had that instability where mom's missing visits or escalating his behaviors at those visits, he became very dysregulated, and he would have fits, he would bite and kick, he would bang his own head repeatedly against the wall. And I think that was extremely concerning. So it's extremely clear that children cannot be allowed to languish. We have to give parents a reasonable amount of time, but when they fail to make their progress along their case plans, we don't require parental perfection. But I think the law is very clear that we're looking for consistent improvement. And the court below, I believe, very aptly described this case as a roller coaster. Ms. J had some good moments, but we almost always crashed and burned. And that's not fair to Jaden and Stevie, and that's not in their best interest to allow them to continue with that. I want to touch just briefly on the discussion about the use of narcotic substances and how that impacted the children. I think the evidence at trial, starting with that initial arrest, was that Ms. J used substances in front of the children. The children were present when she was initially arrested. We had hair follicle tests that were entered into evidence that showed both children had been exposed to and, in fact, ingested methamphetamine. The controlled substances were routinely kept in diaper bags belonging to the children. And obviously the biggest impact Ms. J's substance abuse had was on the fact it brought her into repeated contact with the justice system and incarceration. We had Jaden talking with his counselor and able to vocalize to her that at age 7 he knew when the therapist or the family support worker told and that mom was in time out again, he knew she was in jail. And I think that's a huge burden for a child of that age to bear. So I'm going to wrap up a little bit early unless there's additional questions, but I would ask that you sustain uphold the decision of the trial court, and that Ms. J's rights be terminated, as the state did prove by clear and convincing evidence at least one of the statutory grounds under 43-292, and that termination was in Jaden and Stevie's best interests.
Do you have any further questions? We have no further questions, so thank you very much. The appellant is out of time. And so, counsel, you are excused and your case is submitted.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next case this morning is Assad versus Sydney Regional Medical Center. We'll wait a moment and let some of the folks clear the room.